From Washington, D.C., you are listening to Rule of Law Albania with Albi Cela.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this new episode of Rule of Law Albania. My guest today is Ambassador Clint Williamson. He's the Senior Director of the International Rule of Law, Governance and Security at the McCain Institute for International Leadership at Arizona State University, and a professor of practice at the Sandra Day O'Connor College of Law at Arizona State University. He served as U.S. Ambassador at Large for war crimes issues from June 2006 to September 2009. Prior to this appointment, he served as Senior Director for Relief, Stabilization, and Development as Director for Stability Operations at the National Security Council between January 2003 and June 2006. He also served in a variety of senior roles with the United Nations and the European Union. And most recently, from October 2011 to August 2014, he served as the Chief Prosecutor of the EU Special Investigative Task Force in Brussels. From 2009 to 2011, he was a special expert to the Secretary General of the United Nations. And in earlier postings, he served also as the UN Department of Peacekeeping Operations as Director of the Department of Justice in the UN mission in Kosovo, UNMIK, and also as a trial attorney at the International Criminal Tribunal for former Yugoslavia. Ambassador Williamson, thank you.
Thank you for having me.
So Ambassador, today we're going to talk a little about the communist past in Albania and the way of moving forward. It's 30 years since the communist regime fell in Albania, and we're still struggling with our communist past. During the communist regime, more than 6,000 people were executed by the Hoxha ruling. Hundreds of thousands others were either persecuted or sent to prisons or in concentration camps. Actually, today is too late to think of convictions and investigations, because most of the people died who were involved in those crimes during the regime. We have Hoxha, who died. We have his wife, who died. Former ministers and other officials who died. And there are some others, but still they're in their late days now. So it's too hard to think that we can go and prosecute people. So as I said, little has been done in the past 30 years. The lustration was never implemented properly. The Secret Service files still have not been opened properly. And most of them have been burned or are lost, which involve high-ranking officials, which are today involved in Albanian politics, and history has not been reviewed with regard to that time. Well, we have some museums that have been built during this past 30 years, but still they do not serve the purpose of reconciling. They look more actually like showrooms rather than museums of remembrance. And I remember when I first went there, I was expecting something more touching, something more like it would give me that feeling of suffering during that time, but it actually didn't. It just showed former communist relics. There was this small rooms of the names of the people who were convicted or who were killed during that regime, but actually some of them were written wrong. For example, I found the name of my uncle and his name was written wrong. And I felt bad because he spent like 20 years in those gulags of that regime. And at the end of the day, he's dead now and his name on that room of remembrance was written in the wrong way. And on the other side, we have some convictions, but actually they were not about the crimes that they committed. They were about misusing public funds, which was hilarious, I'm sure many people felt bad at the time. So yes, we didn't deal with our past even nowadays. You dealt a lot with reconciliations, with transitional justice in many countries. 30 years from the fall of communist regime, do you think we're too late to deal with our past?
Well, I'll start with kind of the bottom line first. And the bottom line is that it's never too late to deal with the past. Sometimes it takes years to get to the point where some of these difficult issues can be confronted. And obviously, the more time that passes, the more difficult it becomes to find evidence, certainly to do prosecutions or to hold some sort of accountability process. But as I said, it's never too late to confront these issues. If you look at other countries and how they have dealt with this, there have been attempts even 30, 40, 50 years later to criminally prosecute people who are responsible for crimes. In the United States, individuals who were involved in the Nazi regime during World War II, who were camp guards in concentration camps, and who then immigrated to the United States and were discovered years later, were prosecuted. Many of them were deported back to their home countries, even when they were in their 80s or 90s. In Cambodia, an effort was made to prosecute the leadership of the Khmer Rouge for their responsibility for the genocide that occurred in 1975. And those trials were not launched until 2006, when the Khmer Rouge Tribunal was created. So even with accountability processes, years can pass before some sort of justice is achieved. But I take your point that many of the people who were involved in the more serious crimes during the period of communism in Albania have died or are too infirm to be prosecuted. And also that, you know, the prosecutions of Nejmia Hoxha and Rami Zalia were not satisfactory in terms of achieving justice for people. I mean, prosecutions for corruption doesn't even touch the surface of what happened over this period of time. So when you're dealing with more of this historical legacy, I think we can look at other countries as well that offer some lessons. One of them is Spain, perhaps. And in Spain, a decision was taken after the death of Franco to just put the past behind them. And they entered into kind of all of the political parties what was called the Pact of Forgetting. And it banned teaching Civil War history in schools. It banned any investigation of murders or disappearances. It banned the exhumation of graves. And as it turned out over time, this was just not a satisfactory solution. There were still huge tensions in society. And so it was almost 40 years later that they finally passed what was called the Law of Historical Memory in 2007, which allowed for exhumations of people who had been political prisoners, who had been in forced labor, or who had just been simply executed. And so there was an attempt to go back and try to address this past, looking at what could be done and to bring more of the truth out. And so I think this is something that is important to do. As you say, there's still tension in Albanian society because these issues haven't been confronted. And I'll offer one other country as a lesson of this, and that's the former Yugoslavia. In the period after World War II, Tito sort of imposed this policy of not looking at the past, other than simply looking at it from the perspective of the communists had been the good guys and everybody else in Yugoslavia had been the bad guys. But there was no attempt to explore in detail what had happened during World War II. And nobody could even talk about this. And it created tensions that were always sort of bubbling under the surface. And then when kind of the genie of nationalism was let out of the bottle by Slobodan Milosevic, it ultimately led to war and the breakup of Yugoslavia. And I'm not suggesting that that's about to happen in Albania, but there is a lesson there that you have to confront these issues sooner or later. You have to come to terms with them. And it is important for people who suffered to feel like that their suffering has been taken into account and acknowledged by the broader population.
I mean, that's the thing we want. I mean, the people who suffered during the communist regime want. I mean, we don't want to go back after the families of those who tortured or killed during the communist regime. That's not even like a question. Like my family itself, we have worked and lived with people in one city with people who we knew that tortured. I mean, my uncle, my mother's uncle, we knew them. We saw them in the streets and we didn't do anything because there was no point. Like we know that those regimes transform people. But of course there were people who enjoyed torturing and killing. We must accept that. And the fact that those people for example, in 2016, the Ministry of Interior, they decorated former investigators of the communist regime who tortured people with their own hands. It was outrageous. They took everything back, the decorations and everything, because there was this reaction by the population. But still, they keep doing this. We have the prime minister right now. A couple of months ago, he said in the parliament that his father was on the right side of the history. And we have documents that prove that his father actually signed with his own hand execution papers. Like he decided that X person has to be executed. And this creates these tensions in the society. I don't know if he does it on purpose, just to make a distraction from the economy or something else. I don't know why he does that. But this has created a lot of discontent among the population. We have, in 2010, we created this agency who was supposed to look back into the past, into the communist past, and study it and serve us the history the way it was and not the way the communists left it to us. They created to study these crimes that they were committed before the war, which is very important, and after the war, because many crimes were committed also from 1941 to 1944 by the communists. And now the government banned that as well. They banned the study of the communist crimes during the war, because it is thought that they killed thousands of Albanians back then who were against the Communist Party at the time. And they threatened the director of that agency, and he was forced to flee to Switzerland last year, because he tried to look back into that time and he wanted to release a report of the crimes that were committed during that time. But they were threatened actually by government officials. So how can we deal with this situation when we have a government who in his ranks, they have former communist leaders, officials, who still threaten people who try to look back at the history and try to serve it the way it was? I mean, is it good? Should we review our history? Because I remember when I was in secondary school, we were taught that there were 28,000 martyrs during the war. The Germans killed 28,000 people, which I think is outrageous, because Germany didn't have an interest on Albania. We were just a way of passage to Greece. And when I think of it, it's 28,000 martyrs. And the surface of Albania is 28,000 kilometers square. So it was this propaganda, like for each kilometer square of Albania, one martyr. And that's the way they teach it in history class. But it means a lot. I mean, we should review these things. We should teach, or at least tell the children that, look, this is how they left the history, but we shouldn't take it too serious, because the facts are not the way they're this way. So do you think we should review our history? Is it a way of reconciliation, reviewing the history and teaching it to the future generations the way it was?
I think absolutely. Oftentimes, there is resistance to confronting these issues. And a lot of times it is characterized as a choice between peace and justice. And I think that's a false argument. I think that in order to have long-term peace, you have to have some sort of justice. And as you say, I mean, it's probably too late to go back and have criminal accountability, to prosecute people for crimes. That's just not realistic at this point in time. But it's still very important to confront these difficult chapters in the past. And I think this is something that is important for all sides in the political dynamic in Albania to recognize. And any examination of the past has to look at what happened on both sides. I mean, certainly if you go back to World War II and, you know, what was seen as this war between fascism and communism, I mean, crimes were committed on the fascist side. Crimes were committed on the communist side. You have to look at all of them. You have to look at what happened during that period of time. And even, you know, if, as the prime minister might feel, his father was on the right side of history at a certain point in history, you have to look at the totality of this period. And you have to acknowledge what happened. And so this does mean going in and, you know, I'm not suggesting that this is an easy thing to do. In the United States right now, we have been going, you know, in recent years, over trying to address the legacy of our own Civil War, which was 150 years ago. And this came to the fore when there was this killing that occurred, mass killing that occurred in a church in Charleston, South Carolina, where this young sort of white racist went in and killed, I think it was around 15 African-American worshipers at this church who were there for a Bible study. And it came out that the individual that had committed this crime was really sort of deeply enmeshed in this legacy of the Confederacy from the Civil War. And so this led to a recognition that, you know, all these, although these symbols were seen as being harmless, they really weren't harmless. And so states in the South that had continued sort of having monuments to the Confederacy and Confederate flags flying started looking at this and started saying, okay, we've got to take down these monuments because they are painful for a large part of our population, for African Americans, for others who, you know, saw this as a painful chapter in history. And this has been a difficult process. Some people who, you know, many people who had ancestors who fought for the Confederacy felt strongly that this was not the right thing to do, that you should leave these monuments up, that you shouldn't try to get into this dissection of the past and try to impose kind of current views and current perspectives back 150 years. But it's something that we needed to confront in the United States. And it's still an ongoing process. So again, I recognize this is not something that's easy to do. But I think this is an important aspect of political leadership, is for people who are in these leadership positions to not only sort of point fingers at their political opponents, but also to be willing to look critically at their own parties, at their own legacies, the legacies that they've inherited, and try to address these things for the good of the country. So you already do have some laws that are in place, some mechanisms that were created. I think it would be important to try to empower these and to do this in an objective way, to bring in historians that can look at this in an objective fashion, that aren't gonna look at it through a partisan political prism. And again, it's not easy to do, but it is something that's important to do.
Since you talk about symbols and monuments, I'm going to go back to the TRCs later after this question, but since you came in with the symbols and monuments, do you think, is it good to ban communist symbols, for example, like they did in Hungary and in Poland? Because lately we've noticed, especially in the recent years, and especially in the 1st of May, in Labor Day, which is a communist, feast, and also on the 29th of November, which is a liberation day from the Nazi regime in Albania. We have these people that still are nostalgic about the communist regime, who go out with communist symbols, big pictures of Hoxha and other communist leaders. And it creates a lot of tension among those who suffered during the communist regime. They're like, why should they still go out with those symbols? Those symbols that incited all the hatred and only killed people during the communist regime. Do you think it's a good idea to ban these symbols?
I think curtailing their use is important, and the manner in which they're displayed. So I think some sort of restriction on the use of symbols that are seen by a large segment of the population as being hateful is important. I don't think anyone supports the display of swastikas or symbols of the Nazi regime. And most countries have laws forbidding that. In the United States, the approach has been a little bit different. I mean, our laws for free speech allow the display of symbols, but there still has been a strong debate about, you know, how these things are displayed. And so, for example, because of these free speech laws, people can privately display symbols. But there has been this strong consensus that symbols should not be displayed by any sort of governmental entity, by you know, by governmental bodies, the types of things where Confederate flags were flying over state houses, state capitals, this kind of thing. There has now, we have now achieved a widespread consensus that these type of symbols are inappropriate in any sort of public setting like that. So I think this is something that Albania has to grapple with in terms of what your own laws are, your constitutional protections on free speech. Certainly you have to allow citizens to express themselves. And the, as I said, the United States is much more expansive about this than say Germany, which absolutely forbids any type of display of symbols from the Nazi period. So there's probably a right balance somewhere in between. But I think that that when people are using symbols that they know have a negative impact on a large portion of the population, then they need to look critically at whether it's appropriate to show, to display those. And this is something that the government needs to take in, take steps on and try to address, because this is something that affects the population as a whole. And again, it moves past this idea of creating this us versus them dynamic in the political dialogue to one of trying to govern all of the people in the country, and you know, try to seek some sort of unity for Albanians as a whole, as opposed to an identity that's based only on your political legacy.
I understand. So we said that persecution is not an option anymore. It's been 30 years. It's past that time. Do you think TRC would work in Albania? And for those who don't know, it's a Truth and Reconciliation Commission. Do you think that it, we would still have time to implement a TRC?
I think a truth and reconciliation process is probably the most appropriate way to approach this. It is, you know, there truth and reconciliation commissions are not perfect. And they have been successful in certain settings. South Africa is probably the most famous of these settings, and largely because of the oversized role that Nelson Mandela played there in trying to steer South Africa from the period of apartheid to a diverse democracy. And so, you know, in South Africa, it was successful because there was also the threat of criminal prosecution for people who would not cooperate with the TRC process. And basically South Africa adopted this idea that rather than seeking vengeance, rather than prosecuting people, they would try to just bring the truth out, and that this would help to bring closure to people whose family members had been imprisoned or killed, you know, identifying where they were buried, allowing, you know, families to rebury their dead with dignity, things like that. And so I think if a truth and reconciliation process is entered into in Albania with the idea of bringing closure to people and not being something that is seen as a vindictive process, as a process of vengeance, then it can be successful. And I think that's going to be important to get buy-in politically from everyone on the political spectrum. But it also has to be clear that any sort of process like this would examine the actions of all sides. And, you know, so maybe going back to the period during World War II, as I said, looking at the crimes that they were committed by fascist forces, as well as those committed by communist forces, and then during the period of communism. So it would need to look at everything. And at this point, it really is just going to be a matter of trying to create a consensus on an objective history over this time period, but also ideally one that will help to identify perhaps where some of those who disappeared ended up, you know, where they were buried, allowing families to rebury them if they have not had that chance up until now. again, just bringing some degree of closure to those people who suffered or whose family members suffered during that period.
I mean, that's the aim. It's almost 5,000 people that we still don't know where they are buried, and their families still keep suffering because they were never able to bury the bodies of their own sons, of their own families. That is what created this tension. And the thing is, none of the governments in the past 30 years has tried to deal with this. But with every year passing, the gap became bigger. There is still, we should say, like, there's still hatred. Maybe it's not there in the open. You can tell. But in smaller communities, you can see that there's still hatred among we and them, the people who suffered during the communist regime and the families of those who did those horrific crimes. And again, I agree that sons do not carry the sins of their fathers. I totally agree with that. I can't judge the family of someone who did those crimes during the communist regime. But again, we have people like the prime minister or many others who feel proud about what their fathers did. And that is what created this hatred. I mean, there are still these people who do not deny what happened during that time. And I think those should be the first ones to step up and say, look, we're sorry that this happened. And I think that would be the first step towards closing this gap between these two communities. Ambassador Williamson, thank you so much for being in this first part of Rule of Law Albania. It was a real pleasure, and we'll move forward to the second part in a bit.